Hey, Travis, it's Chris Kelly and Lori and Kelly in Pensacola.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
How are y'all?
Good. Is Paul out?
No, he's in here. He wanted a different seat.
Okay. Hey, Paul.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Good, good, good.
All right. Anybody? Rob's here.
Oh, good.
Okay.
All right.
Have a good weekend. Everybody have a good weekend?
Yep.
Roger Federer won another Wimbledon.
That was awesome.
That was,
yeah.
All right. Let's get started. I don't know if anybody noticed the date today, but it's 7/17/17.
I did not.
Now I do.
I had some good ideas. I took the week off and went fly fishing and read a couple of books and came up with some variations on what I do. So I'll try one of them out on you today because I think it's pretty good.
Where did you go fly fishing?
I went out to Idaho to Three Rivers Ranch in Ashton, Idaho.
Okay.
Other side of the... Do you know where that is?
No, we go every year to Big Sky, Montana, to the Madison and the Yellowstone.
Yeah.
We went earlier this year.
Madison is great. I know. Everybody talks about Big Sky. I haven't been out there, but I'd love to go. Just too many good places to fish. Not enough time, right?
I know.
Yeah.
I know. Love it. All right, so how was week two, and who's done their homework?
So we'll start week two, which actually was a two-week week because of 4th of July weekend. Lori tells us that we are ahead or at least 90-something percent through on our homework. And actually, she's already started to read the books for next week, so she's a little bit ahead of me. Yeah. We've had a lot of fire calls, a lot of here's the new process to the top people calls. We actually, and this is a question, Rob, we've reserved having the Supernova service call with some of the lower third of the book because the way it sets up, you know, two or three new clients in the first 2 or 3 months will get them pushed down fairly quickly. And so we're not telling everybody about the Supernova because we can see probably within 6 months some of these people will not be there, but we're still going to service them the same way.
Yeah, I mean, you have to, you have to go at your pace. You know, the quicker we do this, the better. You've got some, everybody's got their own special situation about why, you might want to, for Lori's sake, you keep in touch those accounts. And things like that, but the process, the quicker you get into the process and have the clients understand it, the quicker the chaos leaves and the rituals begin and life becomes amazingly organized. So
and we have assigned our vice presidents and done our competency tests, so
okay.
we're ready to move.
Okay, good. So who's doing what in your vice presidencies?
All right, so somebody who's more – Lori's going to have to tell you the roles because I can't remember the titles.
So VP of planning.
VP of planning starts out, or director of planning, however you want to do it.
She's got them now.
That's me.
That's Lori.
Okay.
VP of
implementation.
Is Chris.
That's me. Chris.
Okay.
Brand is Kelly.
Brand is Kelly.
Yep.
Marketing is me, Lori. That's how you were going to organize. Leadership is Chris.
Did you get those last two?
Yeah, and leadership is Chris, right?
Correct.
So, in the end, Chris, you're responsible for everything.
The buck stops here.
Yeah, you're kind of me. you're kind of me on the team, right? You're Rob. And then you can assign everything, but in the end, if somebody doesn't do something, it's your fault.
Okay.
All right. So mentally, you got to get that in your head. And, like, I had a team that just, a wonderful, fabulous team, that just loving Supernova, doing great. And we were in month five, I think. You know, we do 12 weeks of coaching, right? We're real intense. And then we do once a month for the next 9 months. So what I ask you to do in those 9 months is have you report in by director or vice president roles. So, you know, I say, how's it going? And let's report in based on your roles and responsibilities. So the vice president planning reports and so forth. All right. Interestingly enough, the leader went out to Wyoming for a month. And so they weren't having consistent team meetings while he was gone. And I asked whose fault that was. And in truth, it was the brand manager is in charge of all scheduling. That means meetings, scheduling appointments for clients, 1242s, keeping up the game board. That has been delegated to that person by the leader. That's their role and responsibility. But if they don't do it, ultimately it's the leader's responsibility. So what I said was, if you're going to go away, even for a week, you hand off the duty. So think of it as a ship, and you're the captain, and you leave the ship, and you're underway. You turn over the captaincy or the full responsibility of the ship to the executive officer, the person next in charge, and the ship operates as if you're still there. Think about in the Navy, if the captain had to go to the Pentagon for a reason and left the ship, the ship then would flounder for, you know, a week while he was away. That would be ridiculous. So think of the roles and responsibilities. You always have to have a backup so that if you are on vacation, you have somebody that's going to take on your role. So you've got to cross-train at least one other person, if not two other people, in what you do and how you do it. So you should have a one-page write-up on what you do, when you do it, and how you do it, so that you can laminate it and then hand it to the – and it should be in a folder, you know, in a book, so the person that's taking over the job can go and look at it and refresh themselves on what you do and how you do it. Okay, it can be a checklist. It can be written out. Not as important as the fact that it's step-by-step process of what you do. That makes sense?
Yep. As little as we know about the roles right now, it makes sense conceptually. I think we have some steps to go down to figure out exactly what it is that we do on a week-by-week basis in those positions because we haven't done them yet.
All right, so this is how we build our business plan. It's really simple. I mean, it can be – I can build a business plan for you in an hour. The vice president of planning or the director of planning's job is to evaluate the planning, your ability to plan. Do we have to train? Do we have to get our skills up? Or do we have to delegate? That's part of the plan, getting from where we are today to where we want to be. It might be a 2 on a scale of 1 to 10 in planning. We got to get to a 10, so we got a lot of training to do. Or it might be an 8, and we want to get to a 10. In terms of execution, the question is, yes, we know how to plan. We're brilliant at it. But we only have 20% of our clients with a plan. And think of it as not a physical plan, but a planning process that's going on forever. So every
Rob, are you talking about a business plan, or are you talking about a financial plan for a client?
I'm talking about a financial plan for a client.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we talk about multi-generational planning process that goes on forever. They get in the river of planning and they stay in it. They don't ever leave. So, yes, you have physically done a plan for somebody, but that's just a physical book. But they need constantly updating as things evolve and the person's life changes.
So when you say documenting what we do and how we do it, you're talking about like gathering data and questions we ask. At that level, is that what you're talking about?
No, it doesn't have to be that level. It has to be just simply, if I'm the vice president of planning and I'm away for a week, where am I in terms of my plan? Vice president of planning probably can get away with being gone a week without it changing the world.
That's not fair.
But theoretically, if they were supposed to do a plan that week, another person should be able to step in and do that plan for them that week. Now, they're not going to be the only ones doing planning, but they're in charge of making, for example, that same team I was talking about has done 90 plans this year, I think, or 110, whatever. They've done a lot of plans. And so they've got a schedule of how many plans they do every single week because they want to hit their goal. So that's what you do. That's what that person does. You don't all have to think about that because one person's thinking about it all the time. And that's their, you know, in the Navy, we had two jobs. For me, I was a pilot, plus I was an officer. So in your case, you're a financial advisor, plus you're an officer. So you got a role and responsibility on the team to be an officer and in this case, be the director of planning or vice president of planning. Okay?
Yep.
So each one has got a very specific set of – the vice president of implementation is in charge of the 24-month calendar that we're going to develop. They're in charge of training to get people prepared for – the specialty that we're – the products we're going to introduce, the concepts. They're in charge of the investment process. Anytime you have a new manager set into the plan, that person's responsible for it. All right, so you don't all need to go to the meeting with a wholesaler that's got a new fabulous fund, just the vice president of implementation. Vice President of Brand Management in charge, there's two things that fall under that responsibility, and that is practice management and rapid response management, all right? So they're in charge of operations and service. So practice management.
Can I guess that could be like Pam? Is that who'd be the best for that role?
Yes. And this, you know, it'd be like, Kelly is in charge for Chris's team, and she would be in charge of both the practice management or the supernova process, the entire service model. She's in charge of the calendar, making sure all appointments are set, making sure we have sending out an agenda and an executive summary, and then rapid response to problems, making sure that the rapid response managed team is ready and can execute brilliantly and make sure that problems are resolved quickly. And then Vice President of Marketing is in charge of all marketing, everything that we do to create our growth. Sets the growth targets. Say we want to grow 20% a year. How are we going to do it? What are we going to need in terms of assets? And then how are we going to achieve that asset growth? Are we going to develop picking from different strategies, what are we going to do in order to grow? And then the vice president of leadership is in charge of everything, all the other responsibilities, plus they meet personally with each person on the team and develop a customized individual plan on how they're going to reach their personal goals plus their professional goals. They might say, my personal goal is to get my MBA and to lose 20 pounds. Okay, my professional goal is to become a CFP and I really want to knock it out of the park in terms of planning this year. So that's it. So you can see that if somebody, goes away, you don't want the whole ship to stop. You want it to keep going. In terms of meetings, and you're going to learn about the game board, so Kelly would also be in charge of scheduling all meetings that happen for the team, as well as, of course, meetings that happen with clients and prospects. So it's a big job. It's a hard job. But when you eliminate the incoming phone calls and eliminate the chaos and the unexpected meetings and the interruptions, then those people have time to do their jobs. So one of the things we have to do as a team to give them the chance to do their job is to eliminate interruptions, eliminate incoming phone calls pretty much, the unexpected meeting. Can't just have random meetings. Well, so you got to control that. Got to keep away the wholesalers. You got to organize yourself so people never interrupt anybody. And you don't interrupt them.
Yep.
You're not just yelling out to them and saying, hey, give me this, give me that. No, you let them work. Okay? Any questions on...
Tell me one more time what the implementation guy does.
Implementation guy is typically what we would have thought of as the investment guy.
Okay.
The guy that's in charge of the, if you did a financial plan and they handed it to you, and you had all these things to do, the low-hanging fruit, asset allocation, modeling, that would be all part of the investment guy's role and responsibility. They also are in charge of what we call the 24-month calendar. So instead of just randomly coming up with ideas as to what we're going to focus on this month, we have it all organized so that we have a, quote, 24-month calendar. We give ourselves 2 months on each service that we're going to introduce. Call it batch processing. So rather than just coming up and doing one mortgage or one long-term care policy, we kind of wait. Most of the time you don't need to do those things immediately. You do the asset allocation and you do the investment pieces and set up the 529s and you do all that. But you can wait on the – if a guy needs a mortgage, he needs a mortgage. But, the long-term care, disability, these things, even though you don't sell disability, you probably want to talk about it. Those things we can batch process together, but there's an educational component. So let's say we're going to talk about Social Security. When do you take Social Security? What supplemental Social Security plan should you use? Let's say we're going to do that. Well, we need to educate ourselves on that. Everybody's got to be up to speed. And that's the job and role and responsibility of the vice president of implementation. And, again, you can arrange to have outside people come in and educate the team and teach you and all that, but that's the role and responsibility of the vice president of implementation.
Rob, one of the questions is we've had some of these conversations with the top clients. I have been using August 1st because it's a nice calendar month in we're going to start this process August 1st. Is 2 weeks from now really realistic?
Yeah, and you don't have to. What I tell you to do is to leg in. You know, it's like buying a stock. You may not want to buy the whole stock. You know, put 50,000 shares at once. You may want to leg in and buy it gradually over time. So that's what we do with this thing. We don't want to sign up everybody at once. We want to bring some people in, you know, bring 10 in. That's why I tell you, you know, now you should be doing 10% of your people. Now you should be doing another 10% of your people. Now you should be up to 20%. Now you should be at 30%. So the idea is to not all of a sudden go full bore with 100%. Because it can be a bit overwhelming for everybody. And you want to test your ability to deliver, right? Because you don't want to, you know, overpromise and underdeliver. So you want to sign up 10 people, see how, you know, make sure you can schedule the appointments. Everybody, you know, how's the agenda? Did we send the agenda out? Meet with the people. Work great. Send them executive summary. They have their folders. It works, okay? So we can do it with 10. Now we can do it. Let's do another 10. And do another 10. Do another 10. And then you have them, you know, we want to be done by about the 8th or 9th week. So we have some time there, 10, 11, and 12, to give me some feedback. We used to do it where we go the whole 12 weeks and never implement it until the 12th week, and then people would have nobody to talk to because we ended the program after 12 weeks. So it was a crazy system. So now we do them, you know, gradually, so you can get your feet wet.
Okay.
Try it out. That makes sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
Any questions on the any more questions? Because that all came from a question. I know that's a long answer. Any more questions on where you guys are, or what you know, the last lesson?
No, I think we're ready to move forward.
Okay, great.
I have a problem. You know, I've been making calls and to my best clients I'm going to keep, and they're fine with it and happy with it and glad I'm doing it. But I haven't started calling people that I'm not going to do business with. I mean, for example, at lunch I had to go get to my dentist. Well, he's got like a $50,000 managed account with me. Well, you know, I didn't have the guts to say anything to him, you know. So, I mean, I don't want to sound like an ass, you know. Okay. I'm sorry, but I don't even get paid on this, and either, you know, you got to put more money in, or I got to get rid of you. I mean, I don't know how to say that without being a jerk.
No, I mean, that's what these 4 weeks are. It's a good question, and it's a perfect time. What you do is you really give them the same speech that you would give if you were going to keep them. All right, especially a guy like a dentist, okay? So a dentist... They make a lot of money, all right? There should be an opportunity here. So, all right, so what I would say is, you know, Dr. Legg, I would have a meeting with him and say, you know, let's have breakfast or after work, or, you know, meet for coffee or tea or something after work. Or you need to give the guy a chance to listen where he's not distracted. Because at work, he's going to be a mess all the time. All right, so let's say you got him for breakfast and you say, it's great to meet. I appreciate you taking the time. I just wanted to, this is important. Here's what happened. The good news is we got, you know, the business has been really growing and it's really done well and I've got partners and it's wonderful. The bad news is, we're growing, and we're all getting too busy. I'm sure you've experienced the same thing. So what we did was we hired a consultant. And interestingly enough, the consultant told us to organize ourselves like a dentist office. He'd laugh, what do you mean? We'd say, well, this is what we did. We committed ourselves to delivering an exceptional level of service to fewer clients. So what we're going to offer is multi-generational planning with full implementation of that planning process through 12 scheduled appointments, 4 reviews, 2 of them in person. And then we set up a rapid response team with 1-hour response, 24-hour resolution. And why we're like a dentist office now is, you know, this sounds crazy, but we used to make all our own appointments. We used to call people, and now we operate like you do, where you have a receptionist, an administrator, handles the whole calendar, organizes ourselves. And so everything is by appointment now. We have an agenda for it. We then meet with you, then have an executive summary. And the good news is that it's going to be a fabulous system. It's already working well. The bad news is it really doesn't work for the relationship that you and I have now. It would work if we had, you know, a full-blown relationship where I had all your assets and was doing your financial planning for you. It'd be kind of like you if, for example, you know, somebody came in once in a while, not on a schedule, to get, you know, half their mouth cleaned. It wouldn't make any sense. So what we've done is limited our practice to less than 100 clients. We'd like you to be with us, but it's going to require that you have a minimum asset level of this. Do you think that's something that you can see your way clear to do? And he go yes or no. So you don't have to fire him. He fires himself.
Okay. And see, Paula.
That took a minute or two. You know, how long did that take? Minute and a half, maybe?
Yeah.
I didn't time it. But
but that dentist is going to go around as soon as we leave, and he's going to say, damn, Paul Wynn is so arrogant. You know, he told me I didn't have enough money for him to food with, so, you know, he didn't want to do business with me anymore.
Hey, Paul.
Well, there's a, my old coach, Larry Wilson, he had a saying for that. He said, that's called an advanced degree from MSU. I said, what's that, Larry? He said, making stuff up. You see, what you're doing is you're making stuff up. That's not what he's thinking. What he's probably thinking is, wow, that's a great business model. I'd like to be part of that. Maybe I can get the money together to do that. If not, I admire these guys for hiring a consultant and for getting their business organized.
And Rob, the only thing, Rob, the only thing I would add to that is,
yeah, go ahead.
Is Paul, we have a guy in the office, and Amanda actually helped us locate a couple of people, so it's not you need to go. It's so what we've done to try to facilitate this is there's another financial advisor in the office, great guy, great lady, you know, 10 years in the business. They have the capacity to do this, and I'm confident they're going to do a better job for you than we've even been able to do. And then this financial advisor has actually gotten a letter approved within Morgan Stanley to introduce himself. He's committed to call them within the first couple of weeks. Because the hard thing we've had, Rob, is to find out where they go. So we've not partnered. We don't have a joint production number, but all the people that we're giving away are going to this other financial advisor, and he's jumping on the phone with them within a week, introducing himself, doing a review of the account, which lessens the sting. And I'll promise you, by the way, the dentist is not telling everybody in town he does not have enough money.
Right. He's going to never tell anybody he didn't have enough money to do business with you. He'd be embarrassed. I had a team in Columbia, South Carolina, a wonderful team, and they were really struggling with this. And what it turns out, what they were doing was they were firing the people, but then they weren't introducing them or finding them a new home right away. That's crazy. So once I figured it out, I told them, look, you can't use a butter knife. This is not a pleasant situation for you or the client. You got to use a scalpel. You got to do it quick, and you got to make it painless as possible. So the best thing to do is to tell them, and then simultaneously, if you can, introduce them to the new FA right on the phone. You know, immediately transfer and talk to the guy and say, you know, I thought, you know, let's say it's a dentist, right? And the dentist says, I just can't do it at this time. You know, my brother's got the account, the other account. I just gave you that 50 grand just to be nice to you. You know, it's not going to, it's really not going to work out on my part. And you say, look, I've got a buddy, you know, a person that is perfect for you. If you want to keep the money here, we're happy to have it. I've told him about you. Told him you're my dentist. You're my friend. He's going to take good care of you. And his name is John Smith, and I've made arrangements for him to call you today, if that's okay. And the guy goes, sure, have him call me. And you're done then. And I always tell the client, and if you're not perfectly happy with this guy, come back to me and I'll find you someone else. All right? I didn't say I'd take you back. I said I'll find you someone else. I mean, if you don't have enough money to join the country club, you don't hate the country club. You just can't join. Think about a concierge physician. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that concept, but it's pretty prevalent around the country. And for a concierge physician to take on a client, he usually charges them anywhere from $2,500 to $10,000 a year, cash, up front. And they don't, you know, I have a concierge physician, charges me $5,000. Now, I wouldn't go to him and say, you know, you're a jerk if you don't take me for $4,000. All right, if I want him, it costs $5,000. So the idea is that, and the other thing you can tell him is, look, you've got $50,000. My minimum fee is $5,000, or my minimum fee is $10,000. So it wouldn't be fair for me to charge you that much. That would be terrible. But this guy will work with you at the present rate you're paying. So you really feel like the guy should feel like you're doing him a favor. And let's face it, for the $50,000 account, you can't be giving him too much service. You're not getting paid to do it. So he's not expecting much.
Mm-hmm.
The concept of sending clients to somebody else is so foreign to us from where we grew up, where more has always been better. It just takes a while to get it through your head that it, you know, in order to have a practice that is your practice and not the client's practice, you got to do this stuff. You give up a little bit to get a lot in return. Okay, Paul?
Okay.
Yeah, it's hard. I'm not taking anything away from the difficulty of having some of these conversations. But the quicker you do it, the less painful it will be. And make sure that you're handing them right off. You know, even a week is, I think, too long. If you can have them contact them the same day or within an hour, it would be ideal. At least they feel like you're paying attention to them. That's good service. And that's the agreement you make. I mean, the person that's getting these accounts, assuming they want them, is going to do great. I don't suggest you share in any of these. I think you just give them away so the person is really enthusiastic about getting them. Any other challenges up to now with this process?
The only other challenge we had, Rob, was on Butlers. We got our
yep.
Lori and I are both at about 75 clients each, so 150 total, which actually was a lower number than I thought. But when you look at the sister and the son and the four 401k employees, and we're moving some of those down. We're not servicing them all as Butlers, but you know I ended up with about 15 Butlers, and Lori ended up with about 30 Butlers. Yes, and I think we may have too many Butlers in our group.
It's really, here's what I suggest. Put them into the system. Remember, it's a 4-1 on a Butler. So you have three appointments plus one in person each year.
Right.
So that's a big commitment, but it's not too much. if they're legitimate. Okay? You're going to do it for a while, and then you're going to realize, this person, I can't afford it. Okay? It's too much time. And you reassign them. And that's okay. You just make clear to the partner, whoever referred them to you, that you're going to have somebody else handle that, that relationship, that part of the relationship.
All right.
All right. I would try it and see if it's something you can handle, if it's too much. Most of the time, like I said, FAs get down to less than 70 clients. I was just talking with an FA this morning, did an interview with on a kind of a radio show, internal radio show. They had 50 clients when I started with them, two guys. They went down to 35. They're back to 50. 2009, they went from a million. They're now doing 4 million. They went from 100 million to 800 million in assets. Okay, so it isn't the number of clients. It's the assets and the revenues on those assets that count. So fewer is better. So you have more time because each client costs you money. So at some point you may decide that, you know, somebody else can handle. I always say the best way to figure out whether you should handle the children of your best clients is to do the awful thing, which is to pretend that both parents passed away. And if you took the estate and divided it by the number of children, would they meet your minimum? And if they would, you keep them. If there's no way, they have 12 children, it's just not going to work, and it's not worth it. Unless that's a center of influence, and by doing them a favor, you're going to, you know, the rule of common sense supersedes all other rules. So you don't want to do something stupid. You know, it's your best CPA, and he's got 12 kids. Well, you know, you're going to help him out. But in general, it doesn't make any sense because the next generation is just going to go out and spend the money.
Okay.
So here's a good idea for you guys. I went fishing, and I went fishing with an FA that I've been coaching for 8 years, and of course that led to a lot of different conversations. And I said you really need to break your clients down into customers, clients, advocates, and ambassadors. I'll say, so it's customers, clients, advocates, and ambassadors. So a customer is kind of a pre-supernova customer. They're not necessarily annuitized. They don't necessarily listen. You don't have their assets. You haven't done a financial plan. They're just a customer. They just buy product. They may have other FAs. You really haven't brought them in yet. A client is somebody that likes you, trusts you, listens to you, done a financial plan, is in the financial planning process, and has the assets needed to be a client. All right. How do they move up to becoming an advocate? They have all the predispositions to be a client, and they refer business to you without you asking. They really like you. Okay? And then what's an ambassador? An ambassador is a person, all the previous, plus they have actually given you a client in the last 12 months that turned into a good client. Now, every client in Supernova gets the minimum level of service, financial plan, 1242, and rapid response to problems. All right? But we can recognize clients and reward clients for other things that they do for us. I call it fair but not equal. Okay? So let's take, for example, the ambassadors. You can have an ambassadors club. And you may, and I want you to put all your clients into one of these four categories. That's going to be your homework. Well, let's say you've got five people that are ambassadors. They actually, in the last 12 months, have given you a qualified client, and it became a client. And you say, okay, I want to do something nice for them. Well, you can do all the things that you would normally do for people that you really think are special, from taking them out to dinner as a group, giving them a little dinner gift, to taking them to a sporting event, to all kinds of things. You know, you can come up with a million different ways of recognizing them. But we always do client appreciation events, and that's great, but you want to make the ambassador something special. And they will not stay an ambassador unless they give you an introduction that turns into a client every 12 months. Now, I thought of this because in my club in Florida, there, if you're an ambassador, it means that you brought in a client to the club, and they put a plaque on your locker, ambassador. So it's kind of a cool thing. They don't do much other than that, but they print the list of the ambassadors every year and so forth. So I think, you know, it'd be nice if you could do... Anyway, you guys be creative with that. You know, we were talking about going anywhere from, you know, tickets to the Masters to Final Four to, you know, but what's a $70,000 introduction worth to you? A lot. So there's nothing wrong with, I know there's restrictions on what you can do, but most of the time, Final Four tickets are really not very expensive if you can get them, right? It's access. And the same thing with Masters tickets and things like that. But you guys be creative on what, you know, you think would be a really fun event. How does that sound? Any comments or questions on that idea?
Sounds good.
Yeah. I'll be very curious as to how many people fall in each category. I think what we call this forensic engineering. So forensic. So you're looking at like a forensic accounting. You're looking at your practice and, you know, shining a very bright light on it to tell you really what you have. You may have, you know, 150 accounts. The question is, how many advocates do you have? How many clients do you have? How many ambassadors do you have? And how many people are still customers? And to me, you got to, you know, customers you got to do a lot of work on. That's a fill or kill. Either they're going to be a client or they're going to be gone.
Still there?
Yep.
Okay.
Any other questions on that? Or, you know, I just thought it was fun and sort of startling to see how few people actually give us introductions every year. So the idea is to keep moving people from one category to another, from customers to clients, from clients to advocates, advocates to ambassadors. And keep working that system. That's one of your marketing initiatives. Is kind of, we call it project upgrade. So you're moving them up all the time.
Okay.
So you guys all have your folders by this time? Is that true?
Yep. No, not yet.
We had to go meet some clients in Pennsylvania this weekend, and we ordered, I think, four or five?
We ordered those from
five of them, yeah.
Yeah. We haven't ordered any from actual Supernova. Karen sent me those.
Oh, those weren't Supernova folders?
No, they were just, I mean, they're the same kind of folders. Karen just had them in her office because I need them so quick. But I have to call and order the ones from Supernova.
Gotcha. Okay. Did you guys hear that? Yeah, we've got ours ordered, color-coded, labeled, and ready to go.
You got your folders?
Yeah, that was like, we got them labeled, too, by the intern.
We had an intern. She's in doing work.
Yeah. Ooh. Step ahead of us.
Well, that's the good news, bad news about having two teams on a call is that, you know, we go at the pace of the class, so we can't wait. But at the same time, you also learn from each other. That's the good news. And you know, it's helpful. Somebody's already ordered the folders, and it's like, okay, tell me, who'd you call? How'd you do that exactly? That's a big help.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Travis. No, I'll just say we were probably just a little bit behind from you guys. We kind of spent most of last week preparing for this meeting in Pennsylvania, which I guess is part of the Supernova, the face-to-face. So.
Let me ask you a question, Rob. One of the things that we have had opportunities is we've already started some COI meetings. Actually, one or two of these went. Matter of fact, some of the top-tier client meetings have gone exceptionally well. One or two of the COI meetings have gone really well, and now we're actually at the point where we're scheduling a second COI meeting, and I really don't know how far to take it. I know we're supposed to identify them, but we're starting some meetings. Is there some criteria with how you're meeting with these COIs and kind of agenda items for that other than the ones that naturally come up?
Okay, great. It's perfect timing. Yes, and here's what I want you – you all want to think of as this, think of yourselves as stewards or, you know, there's a book I talked about, I think, earlier, The Go-Giver. So it's giving to give. You're also a connector. So what you have to do is identify with these clients. You got to be a great listener, and you got to be kind of a forensic identifier of issues and problems, because that's what you want to. I mean, if the guy has no problems and he's living the perfect life, you can be less help to him. But if you can help him, then you're a value. Okay, we always want to give people something, but we don't know what it is that they actually need. So what we have to do is identify in these meetings what it is that they need. Clients, centers of influence, anybody. And our job is to fill that need. So there's a five-step process in working with centers of influence. The first one is to meet with the client, meet with the center of influence, and determine whether or not it's a good fit. Once it's a good fit, then you convince the person that your relationship is worth a monthly meeting. So you meet with them monthly, you have an agenda for every meeting, and then you give them an executive summary. All right, so once they're convinced of that, you give them their folder. If you haven't given them their folder, that's a good thing to do on the second meeting. Give them the folder, talk to them about the process. Then I would invite them back to meet your team. You don't have to do this, but it's a very effective tool. So they come back, they see your office, and you stand up and deliver your roles and responsibilities. So everybody in the team stands up and goes through this five-star model. This is what I do. This is what, you know, my partner does. And everybody speaks, and everybody, and he's like, at the end, he's blown away. He's like, wow, you guys are really organized. Yes, we're proud of it. Yeah, we are. We're very organized. And we have capacity. And we think we do an exceptional job and a very different. You know what? You want to describe why you're different all the time. All right, so when you first meet somebody, remember, you first meet somebody, you want to be describing why you're the same. You know, he and you. What do we have in common? Where did we go to school? Da, da, da. So you make friends first. And then you explain why you're different. Why am I different from every other financial advisor? Because that's why you show them. People aren't willing to do what we do. This is what we do. Fabulous service, consistent, 1242, rapid response, financial planning. People just aren't willing to do this work. We do it. Right? What can we do for you? Whatever you need. We're going to do whatever it is that you need. And then you go meet him. You know, theoretically, you know, you and Lori would go and, you know, and meet with him, and he'd meet your partners and introduce you around, and then he'd explain what he does, what his specialty is, what he focuses on. You want to make sure that his clientele meets your minimum. Probably not a good fit. Anyway, so, and then I'm going to teach you something called the enthusiastically endorsed model. And we'll cover that the next time. But remind me, it's in the book. It comes up here. But basically, it's a way of generating leads for the CPA. Because the number one thing he wants is leads, introductions. And you'll give him introductions, and he's going to go, well, how did you get these introductions? And then you teach him how you did it. And then he will get them for you. So it's a nice process. It works. You just have to follow through.
Okay.
So way to go, Chris. The key is consistent persistence over time, and nobody else is willing to do that. So you just keep doing it. And the idea is to, what do I do each time? Try and help. Try and provide value for them. Articles, if he's interested in fly fishing, you know, personal things as well as professional things.
All right.
Okay.
So really, just like a client, except for the referability and the who are your clients and are they a good fit?
That's right. That's right. And I've got to jump because I've got a 4 o'clock. But so the homework is the homework as described at the end of chapter 3. But I'd like to add the we worked on the 5-star model, which is what we really work on in chapter 3. But also the segmentation of your clientele based on the customer, client, advocate, and ambassador model. And I'm really curious as to where they fit in, and I think it might be very helpful for you to do this exercise.
Right.
Okay, so I'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Rob.
Thanks Rob.
Bye.